You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Xbox One, the Target, the one getting delivered early to people, and then them shutting down their accounts. Did you hear all about that?
No.
Yeah, there were a couple of Xbox. You hear about that, Jeff? Target had inadvertently shipped some Xbox Ones to people who pre-ordered them.
Oh, shit.
Like last week, like 2 weeks early.
Oh, my God.
Early. And so this one guy was all excited, and I guess he had a lot of YouTube followers, so he was posting videos of like the unboxing and playing, and he was able to get his live account to activate or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, it didn't take long for Microsoft to notice that. But they didn't just, they should have taken out their aggressions on Target for shipping them early. But instead, they, shut down this guy's, is it live account? See, this is what happens.
You know what, though? I doubt that they did that without, contacting him first, saying, hey, man, you need to stop doing this right now. Just be patient and we'll get back on
I don't think so. I think because he was kind of live blogging and, like I said, posting videos, throughout the weekend that he got it. And the next one, the next update was, nope, sorry, we've now shut down your account.
Well, it happens, man.
And then they sent out a nice little press release saying, due to a mistake, someone
shipped
early.
Well, they'll turn it back up. The thing is, they can't, to be honest, they can't have just three or four guys on the system running around doing stuff when they're trying to prep for a major launch.
Hey, that's fine. Okay, so there's going to be a firmware update. That's fine. But look at all the bad will that they've brought upon themselves.
I think it's so funny. If you go to the GameStop, totally open this thing up talking about video games. If you go to the GameStop website and then look at the Xbox, all of the advertisements, their advertisements are solely based on the things they've now gone back on in the past few months.
Yep.
Where it's trade and borrow games as much as you want.
Yeah.
You don't have to have the Kinect hooked up. It's almost like, I don't know if you're familiar with Mr. Show.
Yeah.
But there was there was the one bit where it was the two grocery chains that were warring back and forth with each other.
Right.
And one was the major chain, and it was beating up on the old mom and pop shop store. And it was at Fairsley's, we'll never lose your children. And then it comes back to the other guy, and he's like, but we've never lost anybody's children. In fact, I just spent $2,000 putting in a new security system, and it keeps going back and forth. That's what this reminds me of, this whole war between the PS4 and the Xbox now. And I kind of feel like at any moment, PS4 or Sony could have been Sony PlayStation, we won't kill your children. And then Xbox is we promise 100% guarantee Xbox One won't snort bath salts and kill your kids. That they would put that in part of their ad campaign.
They brought it upon themselves. I have no sympathy for Microsoft.
I think so, but no, I'm anxious to get into it and stuff, and we'll be talking about that more on the video game podcast.
Look forward to hearing.
But right now, we are here to talk about some movies. We are the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
I'm Joel.
And tonight we went to the request. And
we were once
overwhelmed with requests for this one. And it kind of surprised me because I had seen it back when it first came out about, 11 years ago?
2002. So, 11 years now.
And I remember liking it a lot.
Now, did you see it in theaters? Or
no,
just one of those?
I thought it was a straight-to-video release.
I didn't know
if it was a video, if it was an actual movie theater release. But I saw it when it came out on DVD. And what we're talking about, of course, is Equilibrium.
Yeah.
Starring Christian Bale.
Christian Bale.
What's her name? Emily Watson?
Emily
I
want to
say Emma Watson, but I think this movie came out before Emma Watson was even born.
Probably, but you can say her name all day long, my friend.
Yes. Okay, where does she stack up?
Does that make
Jennifer
creepy?
Lawrence, Emma Watson, Mila Kunis.
I'm still going to stack her above Mila Kunis. Man, neck and neck. It depends on what kind of day I'm in. If it's a blonde kind of day, I'm going the Jennifer Lawrence route. If it's brunette, variety. It's a spice of life.
That's true. Yeah. This is true.
I'd actually like to literally stack them up, if you know what I'm saying.
Luckily, they're both of age.
Now.
So we can't get in trouble for that. All right. So you also had Sean Bean in this.
Yeah.
And Rochester's favorite son, Taye Diggs.
I'm not familiar with that city or that person.
Rochester, New York? it's just a town in upstate New York that I spent a lot of my time growing up.
Rings a bell. Yeah. I was laughing because I was looking at the IMDb page, and after you were talking about, Taye Diggs representing our town or whatever you call Rochester.
Our town?
What do you call it?
Thornton Wilder, man.
not
they call it,
our
they call it
town.
The Rock.
The Rock, do
yeah,
they?
Yeah, ROC, The Rock.
I like that. All right.
Yeah, it's the airport code.
There you go. Yeah. I've never flown into Rochester.
Yeah, well, consider yourself lucky.
But I thought it was funny that on Taye Diggs' IMDb page, right after you said that, the first line is, born in Rochester, New York. I'm like, well, man, you fuckers are really proud of Rochester.
Yeah, they are.
As well, you should be.
It's the home of Kodak and Xerox.
And Taye Diggs.
And Taye Diggs, who is in this film, Equilibrium, mm-hmm. which... You know, it obviously rings of a Bradbury-esque kind of atmosphere, very Fahrenheit 451.
That's a great analogy.
Some 1984 if you want to go Orwellian.
Absolutely. And it does. It does want to go Orwellian.
Yeah, it does.
It wants you to think that George Orwell wrote this script.
So in the midst, or the aftermath, rather, of World War III, mm-hmm. You know, everything kind of calms down and the government... I don't know if it's worldwide or if it's just in America, but like we'll just say the government of Libya.
Yes.
I was like, did I hear that right?
Because
when I first heard it in the movie, I thought they were saying Libya. I was like, well,
yeah, we already have a country named that. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it doesn't look like this.
So what they do to try to eliminate the possibility of a World War IV, mm-hmm. they start making, they mandate this, the intake of this drug called the
Prozac and Valium. So it was Prozium, I think.
Yeah,
is what
Prozium.
They called it. Yeah.
And what it does is just kind of like makes everybody emotionless because emotions are outlawed. Emotions and like art, anything that elicits an emotional response is completely outlawed and you get like executed for it.
Yeah, which immediately I have a problem with that premise because it doesn't hold up. We were talking earlier about this movie and we'll get into it. In more detail, but just off the bat, I have trouble buying into a movie when I don't immediately buy the premise. And I'm all for the suspension of disbelief.
Uh-huh.
But I had this issue with The Hunger Games, too. Like, I could not picture a scenario where The Hunger Games would actually... And it starts off kind of similar.
That, like, majority of the population would even go for this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Okay, there was this big war, and we called the truce, but the one side that won... I guess it wasn't a truce, right? One side won and the other side lost.
And the other side didn't. And then they just to remember the losses or whatever every year they have.
We're
going to
kill your children every year in this televised sport. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not really sure that's how it would go down.
Right.
And I'm trying really hard to play along. But
well, because if that's going to work, if that's going to happen,
yeah.
the forces, that the oppressive forces need to outnumber the civilians.
Yeah.
Like they need, that's the only way that this could work because there's no way that a civilized society would be like, okay.
Yeah.
We're down.
Yeah.
That sounds fine to me. No.
Firstborn a year. Yeah. It's very much ants and grasshoppers.
Uh-huh. So I get you on that. The thing is, I didn't have quite as hard of a time buying into the scenario.
Are we talking Hunger Games now or Equilibrium?
No. Equilibrium.
Okay.
And I guess for the most part, Hunger Games, I guess I was able to suspend my disbelief for the most part for that movie. But we're talking about this movie, this Equilibrium. I was able to suspend disbelief for the most part. From a story standpoint, because I always really liked, especially like books and short stories like this.
Absolutely.
Like your Harrison Bergeron.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved reading stuff like this. I don't think it translates as well into a movie because if you actually played it correctly and accurately, then it would have been the most boring film. But the problem is you don't want to make a very boring film. So you have actors emoting. But they're totally blowing your premise out of the water.
Yeah, thank
because
you.
They're showing emotion when they're not supposed to be.
That was the main problem I had with Taye Diggs' character. So Taye Diggs is all right. So at the beginning of the movie, Christian Bale. I'm gonna do that thing.
He's a Grammaton cleric.
Yes, that's what they call him. Which are basically they're almost like the Jedi now.
They're like Jedi with guns.
Yeah. In fact, they even invented their own kind of martial arts. What do they call it?
Gunkata.
Gunkata, which I know people have been referring to as gun fu.
I called it gun fu. I didn't know there was an actual proper name until I watched it again today.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like I said, I hadn't watched it since 2002.
Yeah. Well, how does it hold up? for you, having seen it
before.
For
the most part. It still holds up fairly well.
It's not bad.
As far as I'm concerned. It has its flaws.
Yeah.
It has its flaws that I didn't catch on to the first time around, that I was a little bit more critical of this time.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I still kind of dug what I saw. I think that the third act suffers greatly.
Ooh, yeah. We'll get into that in a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Before I get off my point, so Taye Diggs. So Taye Diggs is the new partner of Christian Bale.
Well, we should talk about what happened to his old partner.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, well... Yeah, let's talk about Tay Diggs because you have a point that you're trying
basically
to make.
Basically,
right
the
now
point I'm trying to make is, you know, everyone's supposed to be emotionless, and this guy's just fucking smiling throughout
he's
the
like
entire
a
movie.
Cat.
He's like, he's not quite joking, but he's laughing, and I'm like, okay, you're the first person I've seen crack a smile in this film.
Yes.
And yet, he's the guy who ends up, you know, spoiler alert.
He's like whistleblowing all over the place.
Exactly. And I'm like, motherfucker, yeah, like a Cheshire Cat. That's a good example. But I'm like,
but he's always smiling. He's like, isn't that right, John?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
John.
Yeah.
Like, what? You're kind of showing emotion right now.
He's mugging.
Or even when Christian Bale is out in the nethers, which I really can't stand that they called it that. But he was out in the nethers and like he was trying to take that dog and like release it.
Oh my God.
And like that sweeper team came through.
Yeah.
And as soon as he like started fighting, you heard guys going, oh fuck, oh shit. That's emotion.
Yeah, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That is informed by emotion.
And that's the problem. We've talked about this before, but a movie that sets up its own premise and then breaks its own rules, especially in a sci-fi capacity like this, it's really hard to play along with. So yeah, I was never quite sure where the rules were, what emotion started and where they stopped, and what was illegal and what wasn't, because obviously you have to have some emotion just to function as a human without being a robot.
Uh-huh.
And that leads me to, so the bigger part of the premise that I really couldn't buy, like, how are people procreating? How do we still have babies?
Right.
Because that's all about emotion.
Because it's done on a schedule. It feels like it's done on just a schedule.
I almost feel like they're implying that there's, like, artificial insemination and there's some cloning going on. Christian Bale refers to his wife as his spouse, his ex-wife. That we find
his
out
son
early
calls
on.
Him by his first name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Later on, he calls him father, but maybe that was for some foreshadowing, huh?
I think you're right on that. Okay. But the first few times we see him, he calls him John.
Yeah. That kid is scary, too.
He was a good actor. I thought that kid was actually pretty good.
I read somewhere that Daniel Radcliffe, our own Harry Potter, actually, I was going to say applied for that role.
Wow.
Like, it's a job.
That would have been something.
What do they call it? Auditioned.
It is a job.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a job. He interviewed for it.
You don't apply for an acting gig, though. You audition.
You audition.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you can call it apply. all right, so a short summary of this movie.
Yeah.
You know, like we said, all these emotions have been outlawed, art has been outlawed, and Christian Bale plays like this really badass Grammaton cleric, and he's partnered up with Sean Bean, which our friend John, he brought up a good point while we were talking about this online. He's like, name me a movie where Sean Bean lives. And like the best I could come up with was like the first Percy Jackson movie.
Oh, yeah.
But like that dude dies in everything he's in.
There's a great YouTube compilation of like all of his
all of his death scenes.
It's great.
And you kind of, you know, it's not even kind of. You definitely see that Sean Bean's character, you know, he's experiencing emotions and you could see him already kind of, you know, shaking his head at the actions of Christian Bale.
He's regretting. He's second guessing immediately. The movie opens and they're kind of they're on a raid. They're about to raid some people.
And what we've set up here is Christian Bale's character is obviously about to go through a journey.
Mm-hmm.
But before that happens, he ends up – it's this movie this movie plays out almost like a little bit more of an intelligent version of Stallone's Judge Dredd.
Oh, shit.
Because, like...
Remind me to never see that, then.
Because Christian Bale is, like, judges his own friend.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what happens in the backstory of the first of the original Judge Dredd movie.
Not Sandra Bullock.
No, not Sandra. She wasn't She wasn't in Judge Dredd.
I'm thinking
Demolition Man.
Who's the girl in Sandra Bullock? Judge Dredd. Hey.
I hope there's a bunch of girls in Sandra Bullock. Scissoring. There's scissor.
Ooh. Blue is the warmest color.
Okay, so... No, so he judges his
own
friend.
Who's the girl in Judge Dredd?
It's Diane Lane.
Diane Lane, thank you. That was going to kill me. Okay.
Superman's mom.
Now we can proceed.
So, he judges Sean Bean, murders him, and kind of goes on his way. Well, you know, he starts kind of flashing back, thinking about his family. He forgets to dose.
Yeah.
And he starts to kind of succumb to his emotions as he's going through, you know, his summary duties and his day-to-day activities. He starts to kind of notice things that he never noticed before. Mm-hmm. The sun, the way things are just outlined, you know, the layout of things on his desk.
Yeah.
His eyes are starting to kind of open up to the world around him a little bit. And so he keeps skipping doses and starts to kind of enjoy art and everything. But meanwhile, he's still having to try to cover for himself and still be like he's got no emotion. But, you know, he ends up arresting this woman who has ties to Sean Bean, who he begins to kind of develop feelings for as well.
I like that they call them sense offenders in the movie.
Yeah. And you get to see that his sympathy for his son mm-hmm. that he believes, you know, his son is totally with the program and stuff, and asking, Dad, should I report this kid that showed some emotion in school?
He cried today. I know.
He cried today, and he's like, yes, you should.
I wish we could do that on airplanes. Like, I would totally, there's a baby in row children. E5, and a kid won't shut up. We're going to need to incinerate him.
Right. Oh, God, I'd be all for that. So
just put him into the engine like a bird.
So Christian Bale gets a new partner, and that's Taye Diggs.
Yeah.
And you could tell that Taye Diggs is kind of, okay. You know, he's kind of.
I swear, I first came across Taye Diggs in Go. Remember the movie Go?
Yeah.
And something about that guy.
Another movie with Bill Fichtner.
Oh, yeah. William Fichtner. I love that guy. Something about him struck me as gay. It was the way he would, like, walk and stand. You know how, like, gay dudes, and I love gay dudes. Well.
Yes, he does.
Get
nightly.
That sound bite, right? No, but I mean, like, you know, sometimes I wish I were gay. It would have made high school a lot easier. I got hit on more of my gay dudes than chicks. Oh, yeah.
Yes, because blind hate and aggression and, you know, having
well, I'm just saying,
bigots and people trying
choose,
to take your rights away,
if it were a
so
choice.
Much easier.
Yeah, it would have made my dating life so much better.
Okay, dating life.
Fulfilling.
All right.
Emphasis on the filling. What?
Oh, my God.
This is not me.
All right, take us through the rest of the story.
So anyway, so Taye Diggs, and I, just the way he stands, you know how gay dudes kind of stand like chicks.
Uh-huh. Wow.
The end. I always thought Taye Diggs was closeted. And then you said he's married to...
He's married to Idina Menzel, who is Elphaba in Wicked.
Yeah, and they met on Broadway.
They met on Broadway doing Rent.
Yeah, so supporting my theory that he still could
he
be gay.
He could be gay, but his wife is pretty talented.
Yeah,
and
is she?
Cute, I guess, in a certain light.
See, you're starting
I like her better when she's green. Okay, so Equilibrium.
Sorry, I took us on that tangent.
No, it's all good. Equilibrium, so you got Taye
Diggs
gay, obviously, disgusting. He's obviously trying to make a career off of Christian Bale.
Yeah, yeah. He sees him as his protege. He says, you know, keeps saying throughout the movie, someday I'm gonna follow in your foot. What does he say?
I'm gonna make a career off of you,
yeah.
You know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it comes off like he admires Christian Bale,
right.
But obviously you could tell that there's a little bit more going on.
Yeah.
So then Christian Bale, feeling the emotions, starts to kind of turn sides,
yeah.
You know, and starts to, he finds the resistance and agrees to work with them. Meanwhile,
yeah.
Trying to juggle what's going on with the president
and save a bunch of puppies.
Yeah, exactly.
How disturbing was that scene?
That really was. It was disturbing. It was disturbing, but it was also really poorly shot. Every time there was a gunshot, like Christian Bale reacted like it was the first time he'd ever heard a gunshot.
Well, you know why? That too. Well, also he's witnessing these, and that's the other thing too.
But this
okay.
is a guy. It's not like he doesn't remember the things he's done. He was dosed. He's just now opening his eyes to seeing the things and noticing
it
things around him.
Them.
But he wasn't in a trance, and I didn't like that. It felt like that was a weird directing flaw that, like, suddenly they made it feel like Christian Bale was just in a trance this whole time. No, these were conscious decisions that he made.
But if you didn't have emotions and if your actions didn't sway you one way or the other, you were didn't have an opinion on him, wouldn't that be like being in a trance?
You were compliant.
Yeah. Okay, but... You think deep down inside he actually had emotions one way, or now he's struggling with them? Or is this almost like now that he's off to the drug, he's experiencing life in a new way, and he's forced to make a choice as to whether this is good or bad?
The second one.
Okay.
You know, kind of it awakens the free will a little bit more.
Yeah.
But beyond all that, even if what it was, even if his judgment wasn't like, oh, man, this is disgusting, I can't believe that I'm watching this, the fact that the guy is an expert at fucking gun kata,
yeah.
And he fires guns all the goddamn time. So to see him be like, oh, and like jumping at the sound of a gun, motherfucker, you shoot, you have them up your fucking sleeve,
yeah.
And you shoot them like around your head and stuff.
But Joe, these are adorable little puppies. It's completely different.
I love that like the first reaction was, hey, whose dogs are these? I don't know. Kill him.
Well, we got to kill him. Yeah, I know.
Why?
It's like, didn't we spend, you know, a century or several centuries like domesticating these animals, and now we've turned on a dime, and
yeah.
They all have to be exterminated.
Everything has to be exterminated.
That's the other thing too. Where like people don't have pets, where are all the animals? Do we stop at just the domesticated ones, or have we taken off into the wild and anything that would elicit emotion? We have to kill
zoos. Zoos would elicit emotion. People would
yeah.
enjoy
gotta
from
shut
seeing
down
animals.
The zoos. And the same thing with the sex, going back to that. So it's like, how do people even get paired up? Obviously, he had a wife that he had to turn in. We find out in a flashback, in a backstory,
yeah.
She gets incinerated.
Well, that he didn't even turn her in. She was
caught, right.
and he started trying to fight the guys off.
Yeah.
Which, again, emotion. There had to have been some
yeah.
kind of emotion involved in that, or else he would have just been like, hi, what are you guys doing here? Like, everything would have been this weird one note. But obviously you can't do that in a movie. And then that brings up, when you start to look at it with a critical eye, it brings up way too many questions.
Yeah.
I thought that it was an interesting choice, and this was brought up on our Facebook page, that like the children, the characters, the children, the son especially, was able to keep his emotions in check. You find out that he'd been keeping his emotions in check just like his dad since his mother passed away.
I thought that fucking kid was going to turn him in later on.
Oh, I really did too.
There's a scene early on where like the kid is almost treating Christian Bale
like he's his child.
Yeah, he's like, did you take your pill, dose?
What's going on?
Yeah.
What did you do? And like Christian Bale would answer to him because you can't show emotion. You can't be like, you little fucking shit. Because I'll tell you what, if my dad was the Christian Bale character and he did something in the bathroom and I came in and I was like, what did you do? With any kind of accusatory tone, my father would have first backhanded my ass. Then he would have been like, who the fuck do you think you are? I don't care if we're not supposed to show emotion. I'm not showing emotion. I'm being your fucking father. You do not talk to me like that. And that's kind of how I felt the whole movie. Yeah. Like, you need to just discipline this kid a little bit.
Well, no discipline.
Then you find
out
that the kid was protecting him the
whole time. Yeah. Yay.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, whatever.
So the relationship between Christian Bale and Emily Watson.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you feel about that?
Well, later on when we find out, so Emily Watson, I guess it's early on we find out, or he goes on a raid and she's got a whole secret stash, of like books and paintings and music. And so he arrests her and brings her in and it's weird because everybody else gets judged almost immediately. Like they're, all right, off to the incinerator with you. And she seems to stick around through the entire movie.
Yeah. She gets like a room at Interrogation Central.
Yeah, exactly. So I was a little confused by that. Of course it serves the plot. Because she is kind of his conduit. She helps him as he's like struggling with his emotions or, you know, these feelings. And she kind of opens his eyes a little bit, but all from a jail cell.
Well, he learns love from her again, even though it's not, I don't think it's a romantic love.
No, it's not. It's, not
it's just a reawakening.
Reciprocated. And in fact, we find out later that Boromir, what's his name?
Sean Bean.
Sean Bean. Sorry. Had a relationship with Emily Watson?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know if they were... obviously, they were lovers.
They dug each other so much that he took a picture of them together and then wrote, like...
Freedom.
Where the secret base is on the back of his picture.
Yes. Way to be conspicuous.
Very, very incognito. All right. So do you have any major things that stick out?
No, I just thought it was weird that, like, you know, obviously Christian Bale starts to have feelings for her. Yeah, and the easy thing to do would have been for her to kind of emote back to him. But then it would have been creepy when we find out that he was or she was banging his ex-partner.
Yeah.
And almost implies that maybe the same thing that's happened to Christian Bale happened to Sean Bean through her because of her.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I didn't have a problem with the character. I mean, obviously she's there for a reason, and then she serves her purpose, and then they kill her. They kill her. They burn poor
in a pretty brutal way.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal.
That's the other thing too. There's got to be a more efficient way to do that.
It's just like everything is so weird and like
and
you know, I think it's kind of it's typical for this kind of story where it's like burn it. We have to burn it. We have to, you know, it's very...
It was one part Fahrenheit 451, two parts the Holocaust.
Exactly.
Where it's like we had to get our ovens in there somehow.
You're right. The thing, my problem with this is, as if this is the only problem, but when you're going through and you're judging and they like, they go through and they raid everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone.
There's a hell of a body count in this movie.
I couldn't get a scope of like who was being punished and like gunned down and who like the citizens were.
Yeah.
Because it kind of felt like a government without citizens isn't a government. Like there's nothing.
Who are you governing at that point?
Who are you governing? And it kind of felt like maybe they should have populated this a little bit more.
They do go in pretty heavy-handed with those raid scenes. Who just indiscriminately just
killing everybody.
Spraying bullets everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was done for effect. And, of course, you know, there's several ties to, like, Nazi Germany. And even the symbol that they have kind of looks like a swastika.
Yeah, the four T's.
Yeah, when you want to talk about heavy-handed, there's really not a lot of subtlety in this film at all.
Okay,
the world they live in
visually,
or the allegories.
From a production standpoint, I agree with you. There really isn't a whole lot of subtlety. But
I think
that the performances, there are some really good performances in this flick.
Absolutely. But just from the story, the base story... and the world that they set it in. And of course, this came out in 2002, it was right on the heels
of The Matrix.
Yeah, which was 1998.
Yeah.
And
or 99.
It is not an unfair comparison that people keep comparing this or saying that this ripped off The Matrix. Well, and it's hard to deny that because he clearly looks like Neo. He's got this black leather suit on. Why
do dystopian futures always include black trench coats?
Yeah, a lot of black trench coats.
And they always, people look goofy when they run in them. You look great. When you're wearing those long black trench coats and you're just walking, you look pretty badass. But when you're running around, not so much. The wind sprints don't work.
Yeah.
No.
Well, they weren't made for long distances.
No.
Just to march around and do a little goose steps in.
I get the feeling that for the most part you didn't enjoy this that much.
No, you know what? Here's the thing. Ultimately, I appreciated what they were trying to do. Here it is. I'm torn because the story and what they're trying to say is so on the surface. Like, it's not buried at all. It's in your face, and immediately they're confronting you with, you know, oh, this is what happens. This is where we're headed if we don't have emotions, and if, you know, this could totally happen. It wanted to be Orwell. It wanted to be The Matrix. It wanted to be that 1984 Apple commercial, basically directed by Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
It was so many other things that it was trying to be more than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if it could have gotten away from that, if it could have, and I don't know who to blame. I guess I blame Miramax a little bit because the fact that this was put into production right after The Matrix,
mm-hmm.
and just the style of it and the look of it and the way they marketed it, it has to be because of the success of The Matrix. You know? So it's hard to blame the filmmakers for that, and really the actors or anybody who came up with the story writer.
But while I really like The Matrix,
mm-hmm.
I would stand this movie up against The Matrix sequels.
Oh, well,
and
yeah.
I would honestly prefer this one to The Matrix sequels any day.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
But no, I see what you're saying with it. It did feel very like we're kind of trying to grab onto the coattails and cash in on the success of a much better film.
And then just the story, it's so, you know, I talked about earlier about buying into the premise and not being able to. On one hand, and this is why I'm torn, because on one hand, it's like, please, this would never happen. This is never how it would play out. We would never let us, you couldn't convince the entire population to suppress their emotions via pill or injection, whatever they take every day. There's no way that's going to happen. And yet, you know, I told you I've been working on this JFK documentary.
Yeah.
You know, we had things like Hitler. We had things like the Holocaust. And, you know, they weren't part of our lifetime, so they seem so far away. And, oh, that can never happen again nowadays. And yet there are places in the world where, you know, genocide
happens.
is still happening.
Yeah.
People are kind of being mass brainwashed.
Look at what's going on with the Olympics taking place in Russia.
In Russia, yeah.
You know? And I mean, just along those lines,
yeah.
It's pretty incredible that we live in 2013 and we still deal with stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, we're not talking about, you know, gulags and marching people into ovens.
No, but we're still talking about a violent reaction, violent consequences for people who are just living a different lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's on a world stage, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's in a very public place, and you think like, oh, man, this couldn't happen. And if it did happen, you couldn't put it in everybody's face like that. You just couldn't get away with it nowadays.
Yeah, but...
And they're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And even in 1942, it's not like, you know, this was caveman days. We had TV. We had radio. We knew what was going on. It was widely reported.
Yeah.
The fact that there are deniers out there today only speaks to kind of human, you know, our fallacies. The fact that we have so much evidence and we told ourselves we would learn this lesson and never forget, and yet there are still parts of the population. And again, I bring it back to slavery because I tell you about that JFK document, the documentary I was working on. I was watching clips of, George Wallace? Governor George Wallace of Alabama back in the 60s, and he's got that famous soundbite about, you know, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever. And this was 50 years ago. In fact, he was still alive up until a decade or so ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, who believes that is, like, moving forward, that's how humanity will just, well, we're just going to forever remain segregated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you convince yourself to think that?
Right.
How did people ever think that? And how are people still making these same mistakes,
exactly,
these lapses in judgment?
So I guess you could say that even though you couldn't buy the concrete premise of this film, you could see where it was coming from and the kind of, what they were trying to say.
Exactly.
And
on
the
one
fact
hand,
that it is relevant still.
Yeah. On the one hand, I think it's unbelievable. On the other hand, we have human history to show that things like this could exist. So
if only JFK knew Gun Kata.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine the Secret Service guys?
It would be a completely different
behind
story.
Behind his head, around his ankle.
What did you think about the Gymkata element or the Gunkata element?
I don't know what to think about that because there's a quick little clip where they explain, oh, you know, by doing Gunkata instead of just standing there, you know, like a thug, you're maximizing
damage output,
but also minimizing
you getting shot, like something like that.
Exactly. I don't know that I quite buy that.
I don't know if I quite buy it either.
I don't think that stands
it's
up.
It kind of seemed like just Christian Bale standing in one place,
yeah,
firing a whole bunch of times.
That first scene. Okay, so the scene opens and the movie opens, and Christian Bale and Sean Bean are about to raid.
Uh-huh.
And he's in a total dark room, and he just starts shooting people left and right. And it's almost comical.
My issue with that part was, and I didn't catch anything about them turning off the lights in the hallway.
Oh, yeah.
So he just busts in the door, surfs on the door into the middle of the room.
Yeah.
But you still see, like, a shaft of light coming in from the hallway. Suddenly that light goes out.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's a whole bunch of firing.
Yeah.
And the whole time I'm thinking, what? And that darkness goes on just a little too long.
I thought something had happened to the DVD I was watching. I was like, oh, shit.
I thought something happened to my Netflix playback.
But you're hearing some of the whispers. Is he still there? Shh, be quiet.
Yeah. So you were kind of...
You weren't
quite buying the Gunkata.
Here's the thing. I kind of feel like the director is like a big kid. Almost Michael Bay-ish.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, Michael Bay... I don't think he's a full adult because he still gets off on, oh, giant robots and big explosions. And it's just like, this is the worst kind of filmmaking. And yet, I really like Armageddon.
Yeah. I like Armageddon too, but did you ever see Michael Bay's attempt at a Bradbury-esque story?
The Island?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually my favorite Michael Bay film.
God, I didn't like it at
all. Uh-oh. Next episode.
We'll have to do that. We keep like announcing what the next episode is, and then we'll never touch those movies again.
We'll wait till they come out on Netflix. Oh, I got a list going here. Uh-oh. Why is Jeff in shock?
Shutter Island was great.
No, not Shutter Island. The Island.
The Island with Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Although I hear that's good too, the Scorsese movie.
I didn't mind the Gunkata stuff. I thought it was a little overplayed.
Yeah.
I thought we saw too much foreshadowing of it. Like, again, Akata, doing Akata, and that's like a dance. It's something that you have to feel as well as do.
Mm-hmm.
And so to just have groups of people doing that in a courtyard, it's counter to what it is that you're trying to do with this story, what you're trying to tell. Like, these guys should have just been marching all the time.
Yeah.
Kind of silly. And then when it came, so that way it was a little bit more surprising when suddenly they pull out this Gunkata stuff.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite as impressed with it at the very beginning, but I did enjoy the gunfight at the very end.
The very last gunfight? And I get the feeling that's what it all was intended to be like and should have been like. The director of this movie says he invented Gunkata in his backyard, and I believe it. But that the choreographer for this movie, which won some choreography awards.
Oh, so I believe it. That final fight is really fantastic.
Well, but the final fight, I think, isn't indicative of the choreographer's style because what's the director's name?
Something Wimmer?
Yeah.
Jeff Wimmer?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Or Kurt Wimmer.
Kurt Wimmer wanted the motions to be like fluid and you would continue moving while you're shooting.
Oh, okay.
And what the choreographer did was very stunted. It was like aim, fire, these quick, rapid movements. But apparently, so this director went on to do Ultraviolet.
Yes.
Starring Mila Jovovich.
Uh-huh.
And he said that's where he was finally able to do Gunkata the way he wanted to do it.
They do Gunkata in Ultraviolet?
I mean, they don't call it Gunkata. But
we're going to have to revisit that.
I know. I've never seen it.
I've never seen it either. No.
There's
we might have to do that one.
Right there.
Okay. So this was totally not the way that the choreographer usually works.
I guess not.
Oh, wow. That's surprising to me.
So maybe if I would have seen more of what was in that final fight, because it's just like two dudes with handguns standing, 3 feet away, and they're having like it's almost like a regular fight scene. They just have guns at the end.
Uh-huh.
And so like one would point blank at his head.
And the other one's like blocking.
Knock it away.
And fires at just that moment.
That's pretty cool. I've never seen a gunfight like that.
And I think that's where Equilibrium, whatever success that it was met with,
mm-hmm.
I think that's where it came from. I think that the movie, for the most part, I think what people got, they got their Orwellian kind of story.
Yeah.
And I think smarter audiences probably dug that, the kind of audiences that really like Gattaca
Yeah, but
would dig this movie in, you know, action. The people that go see typical action movies, this is a little bit more than what they usually get.
Yeah.
And so I could see where they feel like, oh, they're getting a little bit more out of it. That's what I felt when I got it, when I saw it. I was like, wow, I got a little bit more out of that than I was expecting. But then you get to that final gun battle, and it kind of blew me away. I was just like, whoa, that's a really good finale to this film, even though the whole third act is just crap. The third act is just, it's full of problems.
It was, how many twists can we throw in here?
Right.
Which I guess kind of kept me on my toes, but it was just twist for twist's sake. It was like, at this point in the movie, you can't believe anything that's happening because any minute somebody's going to show up and you know, so you lose all semblance of like story and flow.
There was the whole thing about Taye Diggs, who's like trying to catch Christian Bale in the act of being, you know, a sympathizer, but then Christian Bale turning it around on him and then going to see the president for the assassination attempt, and Taye Diggs was there
and it turns back around. A plan.
Like, really, would it not have been just easier just to kill Christian Bale once you had the other guys in custody?
It was almost like the last...
it was like a Bond movie.
Or I was going to say Clue.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, it could have happened this way, but...
Or the end of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Where
there you go, yeah.
Well, I'm going to go back in time, and I'm going to put a gun in the... Yeah, exactly. And it just felt a little too Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things that felt way Deus Ex Machina at the end. The son who's like, you looking for these?
Yeah.
You should find a better hiding place. And like... Oh, okay, so you created tension with this character just to fool us
for no reason.
And then, you've got this president, but he was always a hologram, and it was always Angus McFadden.
I mean, who didn't see that coming anyway?
Oh, it was totally choreographed.
They never showed the actual president
on
this big screen. Again, another throwback to Orwell.
It felt like a needless misdirection.
Yeah. I think the movie wanted to be smarter than it actually was, and wasn't quite as smart as it thought it was.
I hear that.
Basically the same thing I just said.
I feel
twice.
You on that. Okay, what did and we've probably already covered these.
Yeah.
We've got to kind of cut this one short.
Okay.
What did the movie do wrong? Like what was the biggest sin?
You know, I guess having this premise that I wanted to go along with, I wish there could have been a little more gray area, especially because I'll blow my load. What I think it did right was Christian Bale. Christian Bale like owns this movie.
Yeah.
And you really travel along with him.
Yeah.
Like early on when he was emotionless, I was like, well, this is going to be tough to make you sympathize with a character who has no emotions throughout the entire first act.
Yeah.
How are they going to pull this off?
Right.
And you end up kind of feeling for him and going with him on this journey. So that part was right.
His subtle character arc is really, really well done.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least a lesser actor could have just ruined this movie, and we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it on a podcast 10 years later. But all that to say, because his nuances were so, or because there was nuance in his character, the fact that the rest of the world was so black and white, where it was just like,
he amplified
we're evil, and we're just going to body count, and it's like a little boy choreographed all of the action scenes. We're going to just explosions everywhere.
Yeah.
Again, the Michael Bay effect. I'm like, okay, I don't know who this movie's for anymore, because it's not the thinking man's sci-fi, but it's also a little too high concept for anybody just looking for explosions.
Right. It's not for a Jason Statham crowd.
No.
All right, so... I guess that kind of answers...
Sorry, that was my two for one.
It's, okay. I have to agree that I think where this movie really excelled, besides that gunfight at the end, was the work that Christian Bale did as a character.
Yeah.
There's one moment where they do a raid, and he ends up finding a hideout, like a stash. And in there, he sees like a snow globe.
Yeah.
And he finds a record player.
I like to call this the part of the movie where Christian Bale touches everything.
Yes.
Like it's just close-ups of his hand grazing over snow globes.
Oh, my God. And there are some continuity problems. You get to see him take off his gloves like two times in this sequence.
Yeah.
No, but in the course of the scene, not a word is spoken.
Mm-hmm.
But like he turns on this record and he starts to hear the music. And I can't remember what
Beethoven.
It's Beethoven.
It's the beginning of the ninth.
And... it's gorgeous, and you could see him starting to just get overwhelmed, not only with what just happened downstairs with, you know, all the violence and stuff, but also just being overwhelmed with this beauty, this art, all the feelings rushing in that are all conflicting with each other. You kind of get it all in that performance, and it's really well done.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's through him, through his eyes that, you know, we kind of contrast how the rest of the world looks, you know, when he was all, you know, emotionless, everything kind of worked, It was all together. It was all kind of monochromatic from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah.
But once he started opening his eyes, even though he's still wearing like all black, you really got a lot of energy. You got some electricity out of that character.
They do,
and it was very compelling to watch him work.
They do some nice things with color in this movie too. Mm-hmm. Again, borrowing from the Matrix, you know, I remember in the Matrix movies, the Matrix world was kind of had a green tinge to it, and then when it went in the real world, it was more blue and tungsten.
Yeah,
they do the same thing here where they kind of drain the color.
Mm-hmm. The cinematography was really quite wonderful.
There's some good cinematography right off the bat. There's some great camera work going on. Clearly that director knows what he's doing, or at least the DP does.
Mm-hmm.
Some great looking shots, and not just all like whip pans and you know jibs and dolly moves, but some nicely framed stuff. And they do a lot of stuff because it is very dark. And kind of, you know, black and whitish feeling.
Uh-huh.
There's some nice shadows casting.
It's some good noir style. Like
very
work.
Much so, man. I love the scene. Sorry, real quick. But I love the scene where he's starting to – this is the first day he hasn't taken his injection. They're going up the stairs, and it's in slow motion. And he's kind of starting to realize, oh, I'm just a cog in this wheel. He's looking around at all the other zombified people that he's walking with. And it's done in slow motion. And this is one of the moments where he takes his glove off, and he just like – because he sees somebody like touching the rail – and he like takes his glove off and runs his hand against the rail.
Like,
that could have been done really cheesily or creepily, but I thought it was done well.
Yes. Yeah. I absolutely agree.
More of those moments and less of the Matrix-y bullshit.
Yeah, that's true. Before we get to the fantasy casting of this thing that we usually do, would you recommend this movie?
This movie has been recommended to me by several people,
and
not just because of this podcast, but you know, years ago, this is one of these movies that keeps popping up. Oh, you ever seen Christian Bale in Equilibrium? You ever seen Equilibrium? And it's that and The Machinist, which I guess is the movie that he lost a lot of weight for.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, right.
I haven't
before
seen
Batman.
Those two, and people are always like, "You got to see these movies, great sci-fi." I can see how at the time, it almost feels like a spiritual successor to the Matrix movies. You know, the themes are very similar. And again, it's kind of a – if all you're watching is Jason Statham, Michael Bay movies, then this is kind of like the thinking man's Michael Bay movie. But
– So you would recommend it?
Well, yeah, but if like – I sound like such a fucking snob here because I'm like, well, Christopher Nolan would have done it this way. And it's like
– Well,
like Inception, I think. I love Inception. And there's a movie that I think is a thinking man's movie, but – it kind of fills in these, like all these little questions you would have. Well, how do they do this? And even if they're like one line throwaways, like, oh, well, we can't do this because of this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's fine. But like answers to the question, like how do we procreate? How are people even getting married or having spouses if there's no emotion, there's no love? Like it almost insinuates he's never had sex before and he's finally getting some, that scene when it's like him and Emily Watson.
And they touch fingers.
They touch fingers from across. Like, that was so sweet, but it's like, okay, how let's get some backstory here. Right. How is it normally work?
I gotcha. So you just kind of wanted that world fleshed out a little bit more explanation.
A little more cerebral and less. I feel like they're really shoehorning in all this action-y shit because of the Matrix. I think this is the Weinstein brothers.
I agree with you. For the most part, I agree with you on that. And I would recommend this movie to anybody, but I would throw the warning in that like, hey, it's kind of it's a clever movie. It thinks it's a little bit smarter than it is.
Yeah.
But it's still a little bit more substantial than what you'll get out of an average action movie.
Yeah.
And you get some really good performances out of it. So I would absolutely recommend it. If we were to remake this movie today, let's do the mains. Let's do the Christian Bale character, Taye Diggs, and the Emily Watson.
Sure. Well, for Christian Bale, I'm in love with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I'm sorry, that guy can do no wrong. I've never seen him do anything bad, even in the movie where he's like the bicycle messenger.
I liked that movie.
What's it called?
Premium Rush.
I was like, he's good in that still.
Yeah.
And then I'm dying to see I haven't seen the one that he wrote and directed. And
oh, God, Don John?
Yeah.
It's so good.
Of course, because it's so fucking good. Jogo-Lev.
Yeah.
So Jogo-Lev in the Christian Bale, because we've seen he can kind of do action. Again, maybe this is a very Looper-ish type of role for him. But he can do it. He can do the action scenes and
he'd look pretty good in the black.
He'd look great in the black. Yeah, he'd look like a little Neo.
Soon
to be coming to a Saturday morning cartoon. Little Neo on NBC's. NBC's?
Whatever.
Right.
Whatever. Okay, so.
Emily Watson. You know, you mentioned it earlier.
Emma Watson.
I'm going to go Emma Watson. Just because, like, I like the look of her. There's also some, like, British actors in this movie. So we don't really know what kind of world they're in, what country they're in.
Yeah.
Almost feels like, you know, it's Libya, not Libya. So I feel like you can kind of mix the cultures here. And I like Emma Watson a lot. She looks good. And I think she can fill that role of somebody like you really sympathize with, but you know, she's a rebel, and then really can be the poster child for you know, who we're trying to save throughout the entire movie. Uh-huh. So I like that. And then as far as Father goes, the bad guy.
Are you going to go with Father or Taye Diggs? I don't know which.
I couldn't come up with one for Taye Diggs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not Kevin Hart?
I was going to say, it would always be Kevin Hart because that's my one go-to.
All right, who would be Father?
Father, I got two options here. My first thought was Ricky Gervais.
That would be great.
Because you need somebody who kind of looks like the second-hand man, the accountant, but in the end ends up being kind of the overlord, the badass. And then you got to have somebody who's, you know, he can't be a lard ass. He's got to do this fight scene.
Yeah.
He could probably pull that off.
Okay.
Maybe a little unbelievable.
I think it'd be fun.
But again, I like seeing comedians do darker roles.
I agree.
But I think he could bring another element to it where he could be unassuming. You don't think he's the bad guy until the very end, and I think he could do both parts well.
Wow.
So either him or Andy Serkis.
Okay, so my fantasy casting for this would be Ryan Gosling as the Christian Bale
character. Oh, yeah, of course, man.
Natalie Portman
he'd do great.
In the Emily Watson role.
Yes!
And for Father, what I would do is do a little callback from the original film, and I would take Sean Bean and make him
Father.
You know
what? I had that thought, and I was like, no, I can't do that. Joe's going to give me shit.
No, not at all.
But I think you did it.
I think that would be excellent.
No, so, that's a great idea.
So that's it. I don't know what your fantasy casting would be, so that's why I'm going to ask you to tell us about it on Facebook, our 8-bit. God, I keep wanting to push that 8-bit thing.
Editing Bay.
On Facebook, just look up the Editing Bay. You can talk to us there. We respond to just about everything. Let us know what you think about this movie, Equilibrium, Christian Bale, and his lateral lisp. Pre-Batman, but still doing his Batman voice in a couple of scenes.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about after this, you know, after the holidays. I know next week we've already got that one lined up.
Yeah, we have a special holiday Thanksgiving episode.
Yes, we do.
Should we mention that we recorded this way back in August?
Yeah, we recorded it way back in August. If you've got anything that you want us to talk about, just go ahead and write us on Facebook again, The Editing Bay. My name's Joe.
I'm Joel.
And thank you, Jeff, for recording us.
Yay, Jeff.
We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.